Welcome to episode 8 of Pirate Radio After Dark. So last night I was joined by JJ from Decent Exposure Radio, which we're going to play our little interview in just a moment. For those of you who don't know, JJ has been the other side of Friday nights on WXLV and iHeartRadio, where I do the radio portion of this show. I've been doing mine 15 years. JJ's been doing his 13 years. And he's on after me every Friday night from 10:30 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. JJ and I go way back. We met in junior high when it was still junior high before middle school was a thing. But yeah, he's very passionate about what he does regarding interviews. That's JJ's kind of niche with his radio show. He likes to go out and talk to bands about stuff that he finds interesting. So I wanted to have him on and talk about it because it's something that's very near and dear to him. And he's also, you know, been a partner in crime with this whole radio / podcast experience that Pirate Radio After Dark has taken on over the last 15 years. So I thought it would be time to bring him on and get him in the mix of things. And he'll definitely be back on as a guest in the future. So without further ado, this is the interview with JJ from Decent Exposure Radio. And I just want to remind you again real quick. We have officially branded this as Pirate Radio After Dark. It is no longer Pirate Radio. The radio show was called Pirate Radio. It is now all Pirate Radio After Dark, for multiple reasons, but one of them is just finding us easily. So if you're on Instagram, the new Instagram handle is at Pirate Radio After Dark. Again, it's at Pirate Radio After Dark on Instagram. If you're on Twitter, it's at Pirate Radio AD. Again, it's at Pirate Radio AD. And if you're on Facebook, just search for Pirate Radio After Dark and like the page. Again, it's Pirate Radio After Dark on Facebook. The podcast is obviously up and running on 8 different platforms. And within all of our social media, you can find the links to both all 8 platforms that we have of Pirate Radio After Dark, the podcast, as well as links to listen to the radio show on iHeartRadio, as well as WXLV. On May 31st, I'm going to have a huge announcement. We're expanding to a third section of Pirate Radio After Dark. I'm not going to give you any more of that, but you will find out on May 31st, probably first on social media, just another reason to follow us. If you're enjoying the show, whatever platform you listen to, please subscribe. Leave us some love, leave us some comments, some positive reviews. We've had some really great feedback, which I have been sharing on our social media, so keep it coming. If you're listening on Anchor, you can now leave voice messages for us through the Anchor app, which we can then either, you know, play in a future segment. If you have a question or just want to say something nice, go right ahead. So yeah, a ton of ways to keep in touch and keep interactive. We got a bunch of cool things coming up, a bunch of cool interviews with some big name people in the industry. So very excited for that. But I wanted to do this episode tonight with JJ, since JJ and I go way back in both of our radio careers. So we talk first about the art of the interview, and then we talk about something that's been on my mind from day one when doing radio, is just the fact that modern times lacks rock stars that speak to the masses. And I'll talk more about that in the interview with JJ. So that's what we got for you. And one last thing, again, if you are interested in using a wonderful CBD product, you know, you can go back to previous podcasts about the topic, but check out Body Check Wellness. We have direct links to purchase that and check out their product through all of our profiles online. So just go to our Linktree links on any of our social media, and it's the third link on the Linktree link. It's Body Check Wellness CBD. But check it out. If you do end up buying it, portion of that helps support not just Body Check, but this show. So thank you. And again, without further ado, here is JJ and I from last night after we held our monthly record club meeting. So here we go. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for many more episodes coming soon. Welcome to Pirate Radio After Dark. This is Josh, the Radio Pirate. I'm joined by a very, very special guest tonight. This is the first time we're actually doing this format of the show, so we'll see how it goes. We got a bunch of new equipment, and we have a special guest tonight. Welcome, JJ from JJ's Decent Exposure Radio.
Hello, thank you very much for having me, and I'll be here until the special guest arrives.
Funny. Yeah. You are a comedian, after all, in your side job.
Don't tell anyone.
So for those of you who don't know, JJ, would you like to fill them in on who you are and how you fit into this show, as well as your own show and all that stuff?
Well, as you've heard, I am JJ from Decent Exposure Radio. My show is on 10:30 to midnight on WXLV. If you listen to Josh and you want to hear me, just don't stop listening. Yeah, I've been doing this for, I would say, I think we're going on 13 years in October, if I recall. And yeah, I was the sidekick of our mutual friend Chris before that for a few years, and then I just took over the time slot, and I just haven't let go since.
So you're the after party of my show.
I guess you could say that, yeah.
So welcome. Thank you for joining me tonight. And, you know, this is episode number 8, and we have a bunch of cool things coming up in the next couple of weeks. But I wanted to do this one to bring JJ in on this and talk about some things we're mutually interested in, as well as kind of segue into some of the upcoming interviews we're doing with some bands, as well as a very special hockey player. So again, thank you, JJ, for joining us. And I have two topics tonight I want to talk about. The first one we'll get into is the art of the interview.
Okay.
I know that's something near and dear to you. How many interviews have you done since you've been doing Pirate Radio and all the other things and Decent Exposure Radio? And I don't know, we've collaborated on a lot of things and you've done your things and you've been with Chris. So right. Total, like everything.
We are at 92.
92?
Yeah. Now, a few of the early ones Chris was involved in because I wrote them, but he actually went to Warped Tour and did a handful of them, so I'll take partial credit for those, but that's in the total there. And yeah, for a while I was thinking, I want to get to 100 and then maybe I can just, you know, cool it, but I see no reason to even stop at that. It's just an arbitrary number I was thinking, but we're going to get there hopefully someday.
Well, you're not far off from 100, no. So you're either retiring really soon or just going to continue until you are an old man.
Well, I'm not that far off, so let's keep going.
So a couple, you know, little random things for people who don't know you or don't know the show. Obviously, what would be some of your highlights from the interviews you've done, whether that's a specific person or a band or something that came out of an interview that we were just like, wow, holy shit, that's really cool.
Well, I was preparing for something like this because I've done so many, and what I can say is I've never had a bad experience. I've never met anyone who was a complete jerk. At the very worst, it was like, all right, well, this was a transactional discussion, but it was all right. But highlights, of course, the Melvins that you were there for, that was really cool, mostly because I love the Melvins. I would say Bad Cop, they're a Fat Records band. They're really four cool people, and I usually like interviews where it's one-on-one or one-on-two, and then having all four of them, I was initially thinking it was going to be overwhelming, but no, it was really cool. Let's see, I would say Suicide Machines, Jay Navarro, that was another big highlight. Coheed and Cambria, I talked to the drummer and guitarist, Josh and Travis. They were both very cool guys, and yeah, I mean, those are some of the highlights. I've had nothing but great experiences doing it. If I would have even one bad one, it might give me some hesitation about anything, but no, I've had no reason to be hesitant about any of it. I've been very pleasantly surprised by everything.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, so you already answered that, because right. You know, you hear some horror stories, and like I'm a big fan of you know, certain larger rock stars, whether that be Marilyn Manson or Rob Zombie or whatever, and you know, sometimes you hear horror stories about dealing with folks like that. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, for a college radio show per se, you know, I've talked to some really large names. You know, we've talked to the Deftones. Mm-hmm. You know, on an indie level, the Melvins are fucking massive, and you know, we talked to Against Me, and like you said, you talked to Coheed and stuff like that. I mean, that's big. So with that said, it's interesting that you didn't run into any assholes or that you were treated with respect. And I don't know, what is your take on that? Is it the way that you're treating them? What is it? Because you hear horror stories all the time.
Well, I think it's a two-part thing, but before I do that, I should clarify. I didn't interview him, but I did get a station ID from the frontman of the Lost Prophets before his arrest, of course, and then I found out the kind of person he is, and let's just say that that one isn't regularly used in the rotation.
Did he treat you well, at least?
He had a big line of people that were wanting to talk to him, so I realized, of course, that was the priority, but he eventually did get around to me, read the station ID incorrectly, and it was okay, but I mean, you know, it was just like doing whatever. So it wasn't bad. It was fine. It was one of those neutral encounters. But I would say that there are a lot of factors in how people treat you. It starts with, first of all, doing your research. If you go into it knowing that someone is sensitive about something, you don't want to maybe poke into certain topics. But you also have to have some idea. If someone has a reputation for being difficult, maybe avoid them altogether. I don't want to necessarily name names, but there are lots of musicians out there whose music I like that I would never want to meet because, from what I understand, it would ruin the experience in a lot of ways, and I don't feel like challenging that assumption. But I think being prepared, I think treating them, their time, their interests with respect, that can sort of win people over, because there have been a few interviews where people maybe start off seeming a little exhausted. They're on like a press tour and they're doing a million interviews. They're getting asked the same questions over and over and over again. And I guess I can sympathize that would surely get old. But if you bring something a little different to the table and just give them some surprises, let them talk about their passions and things that they're enthusiastic about, and it's usually worked out.
And I would agree with you on all those points. That's one of the things I've heard so many times. It's like, you know, the same questions over and over again. Mm-hmm. And anything I've ever done, I try to avoid that. Or even if I do go into that territory, I try to acknowledge that and then take it somewhere that is going to be different. It's definitely an art. That's why I called the segment The Art of the Interview. And, you know, I grew up listening to Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And whatever anyone thinks of him, the guy knows how to do interviews. It's one of the things that he's been credited for from both the critics and the people that love him very much. He put out another book, and it is about his interviewing. That's all it's about. And I think there's people that make a career out of it, and it's interesting because as someone who studies psychology and works in that field, you're meeting someone you don't normally have contact with. You're going into a room with them in a very short time and space that you don't know the factors leading up to it or what's going to happen after. And it's just, you have to engage with someone in their world for, you know, 20, 30 minutes. And it's a weird thing when you really think about the process of it, you know, unless it's someone you're friends with, there's a level of uncomfortability, I guess, for everyone. I mean, mm-hmm. how do you deal with that, or don't you think about it?
I do think about it. You have to read body language at times. If someone seems a little closed off from you, then I don't know. You just have to be able to learn how to read the room in a lot of ways. If, as you know, we sometimes get, you have 15 minutes with such and such, and sometimes the tour manager is there to strictly enforce it, and sometimes they just let it go. So, yeah, you have to realize that the people you're talking to are also humans. Maybe they're having a bad day, maybe they're not feeling well, maybe they are, I don't know, maybe for some reason they're the type to always get a little nervous before an interview, and maybe they've had an interview right before you where the person was talking to them was trying to, I don't know, dig up dirt or something. I feel like if you go into it just as a fan, and we're lucky enough, no one's telling us to interview anyone, so we're doing this because we want to. We're talking to the people we want to talk to, and that's, I realize, a luxury not everyone has. So if you go into it making the subject know that, well, we're on your side, we just want to, you know, have a conversation and, you know, portray you in a good light, in your best light, I think that does melt away a lot of the anxiety and the walls. Even if it takes more than a few questions, I think you eventually get there.
One of the things that I've found to be a struggle with and I've gotten better with it. And obviously you do this more often than I do, which I'll get into some of that too. But personally, I've found when I look at these interviews, you know, there's a certain, you know, obviously you go in there prepared with, to yeah. some extent with something. And there's certain points you want to try to hit. And then sometimes you really talk to someone that's really dynamic and engaging, and the conversation is just so good, you kind of have to let go of some of that stuff.
Sure.
So it's like one of those things, you know, if you're talking to a band or an individual that you are a fan of, and you really want to know something and you have X amount of time, but they're also sharing something really incredible with you at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's a hard balance to, cause it's like, this is my opportunity to ask all the shit I wanted to ask. And it's like, oh, we only have 30 minutes and you're talking about something that's also really super incredible right now that you haven't talked about to anyone else publicly.
Yeah.
And it's like finding that balance for me is probably the biggest struggle I've had. I'm curious if you feel the same way about yourself.
There's definitely that. And of course these time limits are sometimes, you know, just rough guidelines because I don't think I've noticed it because I try to stay engaged with the person I'm talking to, but I feel like the tour managers occasionally give a, like, hey, how you doing text, and then if it's like help or something, then they probably enforce it strictly. But I've had some where people were like, oh, 15 minutes, and then it goes for 45 minutes because theoretically they're enjoying it. But I prepare a lot for mine, more so than I would say most people. I could understand the goal of wanting to have a conversation, and if they offer that and if they're bringing that, then great, go with it. But you have to be prepared just in case they're not, just in case they just want to answer your questions and do that. Because the way I see it, I go in with an interview that if they just answer the questions and don't elaborate, that I'll still feel satisfied that I got everything that I wanted to know. I feel like if they expand upon anything that I bring up or any idea that I start to go down, then that's extra credit. But if I'm able to hit most of the points, and there are times when I'm in the last two-thirds of it or last third of it, where if I start having to skip some questions, because I have a bit of structure, it's toward the end it gets a little more fun and less essential, and as long as I have that freedom to keep going, then I love that stuff, but it's ultimately not essential usually, and then it can be skipped. So I'm very happy with the relative structure that I've come up with, and I would love to be able to say that I come out with a very spontaneous conversation all the time, but we have to respect their time, so that's why I try to be as efficient with it as possible, and I think that usually plays out as being advantageous to everyone.
I think we're at like a really weird time again, and it just keeps happening with technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at the music industry, there was that period of like, okay, the CD sales started dying, all right, vinyl started to have a resurgence with real diehards, digital streaming became a big, I mean, like the whole industry is still in flux, and you know, you hear bands talk about it constantly, and I feel like bands are getting a grasp on it in our world of radio, podcasting, streaming, whatever it is. That's still, I think, in flux a lot, and you know, there's always going to be an audience for FM. I really don't think that's going to go away anytime soon. It's definitely never going to be what it was, but I think that there is an audience for that. I think streaming radio is just convenient, and I think podcasts are extremely convenient because they're on demand and people like instant gratification and things around their schedule. You know, I've been doing my show 15 years. You said you've been doing yours almost 13, and it's like, it really makes you think. I think you and I, and it's, I'm not trying to toot our own horn here, but we have a leg up on what all these podcasters are doing now, and it's no knock to them. It's just the fact of we've already been in the game to some extent, and other, it's not the same thing. I mean, I just started this podcast in December, and I love it because of the fact that it's giving me new freedom to do things and explore new things and really just kind of do the stuff I can't do when it's regulated. Not that it's a wild show by any means, but just having that freedom again, complete freedom, no FCC bullshit or regulations, you know, no other person breathing down my back with their goals in mind or their agendas. And not that I ever was treated bad by any means, but it's just, you know, you're at someone else's mercy when you're doing anything with FM or on streaming. But with this, it's just kind of like, as long as you're not, you know, infringing on copyrights, no one really gives a shit what you do. Right. So with that said, I think, you know, we have that leg up, but it's kind of a crazy Wild West thing right now, because everyone and their brother has a podcast now. And it's like, I was actually late to the game on it. You don't have one yet. I feel like one day you will. I'm happy I did, but I'm late to the game on that. But at the same time, like, you know, I can only imagine what some people are dealing with in these interviews, because it's just like, okay, so here's Johnny. He's 18. He just graduated high school. He likes music and he wants friends. So he's going to make a podcast and talk to bands, and then just goes there and asks like the same stupid shit. Like I remember when I was just starting radio, I had no interest in doing interviews at all because I was nervous enough just to do the radio alone. But I was approached by one of the promotion companies. I don't remember which it was, but they were really plugging the new Death by Stereo record. It was like 2004 or something. And I remember them being like, Ephraim really wants to do an interview on like shows and stuff. And I said, okay. I didn't want to. I wrote this half-assed interview that I burned. And it just didn't work out with his schedule and stuff. And then we had the day that we actually finally had it worked out, there was issues with the phone patch, so we couldn't record it. So it didn't work out. And to be honest with you, I'm glad it didn't, because I would have just made a complete fucking ass out of myself, because I would not have known what I was doing. Not saying I do now. I think everyone's always learning and progressing. But I just think of like, it really is like a Wild West thing with these podcasts now, because everyone has one.
Even Ephraim.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I think that adds challenges too, because how many people out there are just doing really like half-ass shit just for attention, or they don't know what they're doing, or they don't respect the person they're dealing with. They're just like, oh, you're doing an interview with me. And it's like, no, these people are kind enough to take time out of their schedules. Like, touring sucks. That's one thing I've learned, and I wanted to touch on that too with you.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure you've got to see like the entire, and I bring it up in every interview now, is just the brutal nature. You know, you're on stage for an hour or two a night, and that's wonderful, but guess what? The rest of your day is travel, not sleeping in the same place, eating on the road, not being with your family back home or your animals or whatever, and then, you know, being stuck in a van with people that you love but you're going to end up fighting with because you're stuck with them all the time on the road. And it's just like, it's not a glamorous lifestyle. Unless you are Ozzy Osbourne with a, you know, a tour bus for every family member, you're not going to have a glamorous lifestyle. Any of the bands we talk to, for the most part, don't.
Right.
They love what they do, but they don't have a glamorous lifestyle. So, I mean, your thoughts, one, on that point, and then the point of just like this whole Wild West podcast shootout, like, where's the future of all this stuff, and what does that mean for interviews? Because now everyone just thinks that they're a podcasting rock star.
Sure, sure. Well, and also to add to your other points, don't forget shady promoters, and depending on merch sales, that you have to have expensive merch that maybe some people don't buy, then you're stuck with it. And yeah, there are a lot of factors, absolutely. Let's see, I've been on a few buses, and I can't say they were pigsties or anything, but yeah, I would say that it's a very tough life. But on the bright side, a lot of these musicians are smart enough to realize that, hey, this isn't going to sustain me. So they look at it more as a career and a passion, not a career, as a passion, a hobby, something fun. They're getting smarter about touring. They're not necessarily renting a tour bus and losing money on tours. Of course, they're maybe in a Sprinter van or something small, and it's cramped and not pleasant, but they're doing more frequent, or sometimes less frequent, depending on their careers, just shorter runs sometimes. and, you know, that comes with age. A lot of the bands I talk to are more established. That's kind of been what I've been focusing on. So they figured out what works for them better than some younger bands that I think are just starting out that think they have to live up to a certain expectation of life on the road or how to travel or how to be a band, because that time is over in a lot of ways, and there are more bands popping up all the time, and it's getting to be an increasingly difficult thing to stand out from, because generations ago, bands would tour to promote the album, and now they're putting out an album to give themselves an excuse to go on tour. And I think as long as they have the perspective to not overextend themselves, to, although we have to admit there's some technological things that help make touring a bit more palatable now than years ago, because you can do FaceTime, you can communicate in a lot of other ways. So by some extent it's better, but it's also worse. It's in flux. It's going to sort itself out somehow, some way. And regarding the other point, I'm a firm believer that the cream rises to the top. People who aren't passionate about doing something like podcasting, they'll do a few episodes, but will probably fizzle out. And if someone is unprofessional in their interviews, if someone is unprofessional in how they are going about this, word gets around. The publicists and promoters will talk. And I have a feeling that eventually those people will stop getting approved for things. And yeah, I'm a firm believer that if you put in quality work and it rewards you in one way or another, maybe probably not monetarily, but with opportunities.
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to point out here too. And again, we're not tooting our own horn here. We're not Howard Stern. We're, I don't know, whatever anyone's favorite interviewer is or whoever you think has a good interview. We're not that.
No.
We are two people that are complete dorks about music that have been doing this for, you know, almost half our lives now. We don't get paid for any of it. It's the fact of, one, we want to help promote bands that we have a lot of love for. We also want to kind of get in their heads a little bit too, because for me, music isn't just, you know, throwing on a CD and then, or a record or streaming or whatever, and just, okay, well, let's move on to the other thing. Like, I sit and think about this stuff. I'm one of those weird people. I, if there's an album that resonates with me, I read about it. I look at the lyrics. I try to find out as much as I can about it, because it's art, and, you know, art's more than just what you're seeing sometimes. And that's, you know, another reason why I personally like doing it. Interviews with certain things, and like that kind of leads me into my next thing here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've done a lot more interviews than I have, and I think one of the things I've just settled on personally, and you know, this is just a personal decision, there's nothing right or wrong about this, I don't want to do interviews anymore unless it's someone that I genuinely want to talk to,
right?
And I've got to that point. You know, and over the years, even in the beginning, there were people I really wanted to talk to, and I was blessed to talk to them. But I've hit a point now where unless it's someone I really, really have a connection with their art, I have no interest in talking to them, unless, you know, they approach me and want something out of it. And I'll gladly do that. I would never turn anyone down, but at the same time, it's just, I've become, I know you prep really hard, and I respect the hell out of that. I've gotten to a point now where, you know, I'll prep, absolutely, and I do, and I would never stop doing that. But I just feel if I talk to people that I'm really passionate about their art, the conversation just comes naturally,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just kind of, I don't want to sit and prep for hours about something that's not coming from my heart. And that's nothing, no discredit to you.
Sure.
It's just where I'm at with things, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. But I prep because I'm passionate about such and such artist, because I genuinely want to create a conversation or a line of questioning that flows into some of the more fun points that you know, I want to check in how the tour is going, and then of course talk about the new album, because that's ultimately why they agreed to do this, or assuming that's what they're promoting, and then start to get into some of the weirder stuff, the things that they're passionate about or that inspire them. And we have a lot of advantages that earlier generations didn't, because a lot of these artists have social media, even personal social media. And then if that's public, and if you can just find something interesting to grab onto with that, well, maybe you'll get a fun story out of this Instagram post of them outside of, I don't know, some restaurant or some image that just has a story that maybe you can start something, another line of questioning down. So we do have a certain advantage with that. And it also comes down to the etiquette. If I'm enthusiastic and I have something squared away, as I said earlier, I just want to try to have it be efficient if it needs to be. And then there's also that flexibility. And having the interviews so prepared, it's a comfort to me, because it does take a lot of time and it takes a lot of my energy and enthusiasm. And at the end of it, I'm like, I'm always a little nervous on the drive over, but then after it's done, usually it happens before a show, I just feel this relief wash over me, and always good memories, and I'm like, I'm glad I did that. It's like you overcame something, and then you get to enjoy a show in most cases, and then it's like, Henry's the guy I collaborate with, Neostar.media. He takes photos at a lot of these images, and I'll talk about more of his role later. I know he gets to do his thing, and yeah, it's just a wonderful little symbiotic relationship there. I feel like for me, that just comforts me being prepared. And I know a lot of people are of the personality that just fly by the seat of their pants and are more gifted in terms of being able to take a conversation a certain way, but I have to have my notes, my questions.
No, and that makes sense, and I respect that completely, and I think that's good. And I guess I'm wrong.
No, I
am wrong. I do prepare just in a completely different way. Like, you know, I'll prepare every time I listen to the record, whether I know I'm going to eventually have an interview or not. Mm-hmm. You know, the first interview we did on the podcast, not the radio show, but the podcast, was He's Legend. And I didn't really spend much time preparing for that. And that podcast is almost like 2 hours, and it probably could have gone longer. And, you know, I talked to Skylar afterwards, and it was a really enjoyable experience for both of us, because I've been listening to the band since, you know, they came out. And, you know, I've been listening to their stuff, reading about them for, you know, over 15 years now. And it's like, I was just ready for that by the fact of just being a fan.
Right, actually, this is one thing I didn't know ahead of time. You had talked to Skylar a bit ahead of time to arrange that, right? So you knew you were going to talk to him?
Yeah, I had been directly talking to him.
Right, well, that's great. And when you know that, when you can do that, then that is absolutely freeing. But there are some instances that I've encountered, most instances, where you don't know who you're talking to.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, if I'm going to talk to the bass player who was just hired on this tour and didn't write anything, I've had some of those interviews where it's like, all right, well, they can't answer these certain questions. Without my prep sheet, I would be like, what do I talk to this person about? I mean, why? Why am I here? So, yeah, I mean, that's a great luxury when you know who you're talking to. And that's a great time to have an awesome conversation. But yeah, no, it's preparation. If you don't need the sheet, then I just
no. And I admire you for doing it, because to be honest with you, what you're doing is more difficult. You're going into a very unknown situation,
yeah.
And I'm basically now just hitting a point where I want to just be mm-hmm. comfortable and let it flow. So I mean, that's admirable. On this segment, because we have another thing I want to get to, but I want to wrap up this part regarding the art of the interview.
Right.
You know, we've done a bunch together. For those that we can both talk about together,
yeah.
What would be your most memorable moment of something that came out of an interview on one that you and I were both there on that we can both remember?
Okay. Well, we did some really big ones, like the Deftones. Just to be able to talk to some of the Deftones was cool. But I think I think the one with Damien from Fucked Up was a highlight, and one of the highlights that I remember is he was so willing to talk to us. He literally talked to us until his band went out on stage.
Yep.
And we were just like, all right, well, that's it. Go, 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 go. And he just ran out on stage and did the set. I mean, that there's no cutting it any closer than that. That was ridiculous. And then, you know, he's just a really nice guy. Also has a podcast right now, at least one. Yeah, I mean, that was a highlight for me in our shared interviews.
I would agree with that. I think there's a couple, you know, just the fact of talking to the Deftones was incredible. Thank you, Claire, for arranging that. And that was big. The Fucked Up one was just beyond insane, just with what you're talking about. And then the fact that, you know, we're at Morgan's Pier in Philly during a lightning storm. And a lightning storm is an understatement. There was lightning hitting the pier, and they were playing, and it was total punk chaos. I mean, you couldn't have had a better punk rock night. And then having Damien talk about, you know, Double Decker Records, which is local here, and pro wrestling and all this crazy shit. And it was just fun. I like that. I was cool talking to Tom Gable before,
right before the
announcement of Laura Jane Grace and, you know, where that took against me after that and Laura's life. You know, so that was very cool, and Against Me is something, a band that I'm just really passionate about, which is going to kind of be brought up in the next segment here. Mm-hmm. But the one that really sticks out to me, you know, I'm not the biggest Melvins fan. There's a handful of records that I really enjoy, and I was late to the game on them for sure. And I respect what they stand for and what they do, and just kind of the fuck you to everyone attitude they have and just doing whatever the hell they want all the time and making a living off of it, which is not an easy living for them at all.
Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of cool because we didn't bring it up. I'm not going to bring that shit up about like Cobain and stuff, but it was interesting just like out of nowhere they just start reminiscing about Cobain during the interview. And it's like you're standing with two guys that were around with probably the most important rock star of the time that we've lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, reminiscing about, oh, he's this junky guy just, you know, schlubbing instruments around and no one took him seriously. And, you know, now today people would do anything to have him back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was just like a kind of a very surreal moment
mm-hmm.
for me. Just them, you know, and they didn't say anything groundbreaking, but just two guys reminiscing about being with the most important rock star of modern times.
Right.
So that was cool. So that's all I really had for the art of the interview, and we can gladly continue this another time. Would you like to add anything to this?
Absolutely. One thing I would say is if anyone, I don't know, one hint I would give about giving good interviews, people say there's no such thing as a stupid question, but there absolutely is. For example, if you're talking to women, there's often a question that pops up with some inexperienced interviews. What's it like being a woman in a rock band? It's as if they have any frame of reference for anything other than that. Answering that question is probably one of them. So I would say the more interviews you can consume, especially of the person you're going to talk to, whether you're watching them on YouTube, reading them, listening to them in podcast form, you may notice questions popping up. Some of them are stupid, some of them are very common, some of them are very easily Googleable or on Wikipedia that you know the answer before you ask. I'd say just as valuable as knowing what to ask is what to not ask. So that'll set you apart from a lot of the people right off the bat. And that's probably the easiest thing I can say. Aside from that, just being familiar and passionate, which I know is a luxury that we have that not everyone is able to say if they're assigned to an interview, for example. But yeah, just having a genuine passion, it'll probably come through. So, yeah.
I would agree with all that. Thank you.
Sure.
So before we get to the next segment, why don't you plug your show so people can find you and do all that and listen to your interviews because you have them on quite regularly.
I do, yes. All right. Well, my show is, of course, Decent Exposure Radio. It is on WXLV on iHeartRadio. If you're smart enough to listen to the Radio Pirates show, then you are smart enough to listen to me as far as finding that. You can, let's let's see, find my interviews. They're archived on neostar.media. You'll see a whole list of them on that website. There is a section called interviews, and if you check out that, you'll see Henry Chung's photos and my show reviews and the interview audio. And then you'll also see a section that says podcast. It sort of is, sort of isn't, which is just the list of them, which you can click and play any of them. So that's probably the easiest way to go about that. And of course, I have other unrelated things to that could be plugged later, but you know, that's my show. Oh, you can also find my show on Decent Exposure Radio on Instagram and Facebook, but that's...
That is at Decent Exposure Radio.
At Decent Exposure Radio.
You're showing your age there.
What? What?
All right. So, second segment here. It's something I've been thinking about since probably the first month of doing radio. That would have been like November, I don't know, 2003 or 4 or something. Somewhere around. I don't know. There was something that dawned on me right away. You know, meeting other DJs, looking at records, looking at the history of, you know, everything that was archived there. And something really stood out to me, and I've said this to you before, but it's something I've been wanting to talk about, and it, you know, the radio wasn't really the format for it. So I'm going to do it tonight. And it's something that I've mentioned to people that are close to me. But if I was to ever go back to grad school again, which I've already done, but if I was going for something related to music or history or the arts, I would do a thesis on what I'm about to talk about.
Okay.
And something I genuinely believe is an issue, because arts, to me, you know, define moments in time. They define people. They define how people are responding and acting and all that stuff. I recently watched a documentary on Robert Johnson, the blues artist,
right,
who's by many, to many people, he's just, he invented what was to come. And rock and roll wouldn't exist without him and the other guys in that scene at that time in the South. And rock and roll was such an intricate part of changing the landscape of not just music, but our culture, our society, everything. And I mean, we're not going to get into the history of that. Anyone that's listening to this or listens to music gets that. But what I think is missing for a long time now, and I'll just say with our generation in general, you know, I'm 33, you're 34, 35 now? 35. Mm-hmm. We don't have that great American rock star. We never have. We've had things that are close, and I would say Dave Grohl's there. I would say Jack White is there. And yes, people always bang on them as being pretentious and whatever. I genuinely think both of them are just really passionate, awkward people that love what they do. And I think that's great. I have nothing against either of them. You know, if you have that outlet and you've hit a point where you can live off of it and kind of do whatever you want, I do the same thing. I don't knock any of the nonsense either of them do, because they're just enjoying their art the way they want and experimenting, and some things work and some things don't. It doesn't mean they're egotistical or narcissists or whatever. I think they're nerds just like us. They just have the foundation and pretty much everything, the world at their feet at this point. So with that said, you know, I look back in time. You had the Bob Dylans, you had the Bruce Springsteens, you had these people that were not gunslingers, but they were guitar slingers, and they told a story that resonated with the average American folk, mainly the middle class often. And it's just, we don't have that. And I think it's an issue. And I understand rock music in the grand scheme of things is dead to some extent compared to how it was. You know, and I think that stuff comes in waves. People often, I read a lot of things where they say that's never coming back. I think it'll come back. It's not going to be what it was, but it'll come back. It comes in waves. Everything does. But with that said, I take a big issue in that. I think that's something our generation's lacking. You know, you talk to my parents' generation, they had Bruce Springsteen. He spoke for the working class. You know, you had Dylan in the 60s and 70s speaking to people who were disenfranchised, which was a lot of people. And it's something that I think is very wrong about our music scene, in general, that we just haven't had that person. And maybe going back to what we were talking about earlier, that Cobain might have been someone to that extent. And when I talk about this, yeah, there are people like that, but I'm talking on the grandest stage of all, the right. one that resonates with everyone, that whether you like their music or not, they're a household name. People anywhere can talk about them, and it's super important. You know, we've had those in certain genres and certain scenes, and that'll never change. You know, I truly think Laura Jane Grace, a couple of those Against Me records, that speaks to a culture. But again, that's just a punk culture. There's stuff, you know, Mike Ness from Social D has done stuff with some of his records. I'm not a huge Social D fan by any means, but they've resonated and spoke to cultures. And, you know, you can go down that list. And again, I truly, the only people that even come to mind of modern times are Jack White or Dave Grohl that are still alive. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that, because I think it's something that culture as a whole is lacking.
Right. Well, Dave Grohl is Nirvana adjacent, shall we say. So he has that as a head start there. But yeah, it's tough. I'm seeing so many bands out there that are kind of seeming like they're trying to echo past glories. They're trying to be, say, the next Led Zeppelin, very visually and sonically. You have Frank Turner, to an extent. He's bringing up some social issues. But at the same time, you could say, is this just a new Billy Bragg? Which, you know, isn't bad or anything. I think Laura Jane Grace's very existence is more, as much if not more, of a statement than any of Against Me's music. I mean, as much as I like some of their records, I think her thriving is a greater testament that will stand the test of time, shall we say. But as far as rock and roll as something cultural, I would say that the first generation of rock, say Elvis or something, do you think he would have recognized the stuff in the 70s as being rock and roll? I think the evolution of it is always going on. I don't think the 70s to the 80s, I mean, there was a lot of weird stuff in the 80s that people would call rock and roll to an extent, I guess. As far as the state of it, it's always morphing and changing, and you're always going to have some bands that seek to recapture that. And I think the combination of genres is what's going to be continuing to propel things forward. And we're seeing a lot of that. Now, the only part that bugs me a little bit is when you have a band that conforms to the sound that's popular now. Say they embrace dubstep or something, if they want to really be dated. I think certain technological things really date a band, and whether that's sustainable long term, well, that's to be seen. But of course, our consumption of this stuff is different, so people don't have the financial resources to trash a hotel room and be this mythical figure. You know, it's just not sustainable. So I think if we want to look toward rock stars as being something that they were in the 70s, we're going to be very hard-pressed to find too many of those. And I'm not going to lose sleep over something like that. I feel like as long as their message and their music is passionate and is worthy of connection, then I think that ultimately will win out. And then if they have a personal story, they overcome something, then they can be a symbol for something like Laura Jane Grace with trans rights. That's going to be something huge that the next generation will talk about, and we'll look forward to seeing how that plays out for future generations and opens doors. But yeah, the rock stars have evolved and changed, and there are some of the old guard, and that's fine. But do the future generations really care about that? I'm not so sure.
I don't think they care, because they haven't had it, and that's right. That's like my whole point in this. It's not even about rock taking the main stage again. It's about just having an individual that resonates with most of society.
Sure.
And that's you know, the people I've cited from the past, especially, you know, they. People related to them, they related to the message, and they spoke for a large group of people. And I just feel like music in general, maybe just remove the whole rock thing, is lacking that. we haven't had anyone that's been sustainable for a very long period of time. You know, people come and go. Yeah. And they're the flavor of the week, or they last a year or two. But, you know, the fact that Imagine Dragons is selling millions of records and topping the charts with just mindless crap, like, that would have never happened 30 years ago. It wouldn't have. Yeah, you had your Motown, your doo-wop, your pop hits. But at the same time, there was always someone there lurking in the background making something that was culturally changing the landscape of music. We don't have that now. I really don't feel like we do. You know, I'm sure there's things out there, but again, it's always on the fringes. It's not to the masses. And I don't listen to most of the music. I don't listen to is mass produced stuff. But at the same time, I just think people as a whole need that. And, you know, I agree with you. People aren't clamoring for it, but I just think it's because they haven't had it in so long. It's something that unites people, and we're a really, really fucked up country right now. And I'm not going to go political here because that's not what this show's about.
Right.
But I think if we had someone musically that would unite people, that would go a long way.
At the very least, I would like to think that there's going to be someone to come along that will inspire people to look back to some of those, to maybe, I don't know, pick up on some of those ideas, because there are clearly some ideas about disenfranchisement and all that that are timeless. And it always makes me sad when someone doesn't go back and it just, I don't know, explore what the roots of what they like now. Because if I hear a new band that I like, and then I hear they were inspired by such and such, well, I'm of that mind, and that kind of feeds into my appetite with the interviews. I'm inquisitive. I like to go back generations, like, oh, I love Green Day. Oh, they're just ripping off the Buzzcocks, for example. But I do think that even if a band is enthusiastic about something that was culturally relevant and had its time in the 70s or 80s or whatever, that some of that message will come through. And of course it won't be on the grandest stage of radio, which I admit I don't really listen to the radio at all. But I think the people who are receptive to it, word gets out, and it'll exist. You know, Spotify or whatever will be in the future. The ideas are going to be out there. And we have... we're so lucky in that we have decades of music to look back on at our fingertips. It's all we need is someone to give you a push, right? So you could listen to the most obscure thing from the 1950s if you want, theoretically, on Spotify, but you just have to find out about it or get clued in on it. But it's all out there, and a lot of generations didn't have that much history to draw upon. We have history to draw upon and see, oh, this happened when that happened. Oh, I'm optimistic enough to think that someone out there will see, oh, this is a pattern, and we can maybe learn from it and grow from it. But, yeah.
No, I like it. And, you know, that I think, again, sets you and I apart from a lot of people who are more independent in whatever we do here with radio and whatever. You know, I just encourage people, if there's stuff you're passionate about and you like, just go explore more of it. You know, I'm not saying you're going to find a band that's exactly like it, because every band's unique, but find what inspired them, find where that genre is, find where that's going, and find why people are making it. You're going to find a lot more interest in it, and that's kind of what leads me to doing all of this to begin with. And I think the same for you. Because it's not just about hearing a song that's catchy. There's a lot more to it. And it's, you know, there's people behind that with stories and messages and stuff. And sometimes it comes out in really weird ways. But that's kind of our job, to uncover that as to why it's coming out in such weird ways.
Exactly. Yeah, that's that.
So, yeah. So that's what I had. Nice sitting down with you. Thank you for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I think it went well. We're using all new equipment tonight for this one, so we're testing out new things tonight. But again, you want to plug your show again real quick before we get out of here?
Sure. All right. Decent Exposure Radio. It's on WXLV and iHeartRadio. I'm right after Josh, Friday nights, 10:30 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. You can find my I post my playlists and a lot of announcements and other weird fun things on Facebook, Decent Exposure Radio, and Instagram at Decent Exposure Radio. If you want to see the archive of shows I've covered, interviews I've done, you can go to neostar.media, neostar.media, and it's all there for you. The last 9 years of interviews is there.
And thank you, Henry, for helping us out over the years with all this stuff. So
the driving, the archiving of this stuff, the photos, yeah, I mean, I couldn't have done a fraction of this without him.
So shout out to Henry Chung,
yeah,
Neostar Media, and he's an excellent photographer if you need anyone. So I have one last quick question.
Sure.
Is this a yes or no?
Okay. Oh, don't ask yes or no questions in your interviews. That's another thing.
I can to you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine.
That's different.
Yeah.
that is true, though. Don't ask yes. You're going to have a real short interview if you do. Are you ever going to get into podcasting?
Probably, yes.
Okay. All right, so you heard it first here on Pirate Radio After Dark. Thank you, JJ, from Decent Exposure Radio for joining me, and we'll be doing this again in the near future, I'm sure. So thank you, and have a good evening. It's currently Memorial Day weekend when we record this, so happy Memorial Day, y'all.
Happy Memorial Day.
And as usual, we always play a track from our band, The Better Invaders. We stick to no genre. We stick to no format. We just do whatever's fun. We're currently working on a new record, which I'm really excited about. We got the first track out of 10 completely done and mastered and completely finished, and it's awesome. I'm really excited where it's going. But now I'm going to play you a track off of our most recent record that we put out, Beyond the Veil, Beneath the Mask. You can download all of our records for free on our Bandcamp. I'll tell you where to find that in a second. We also have merch on there and physical copies. So it is thebetterinvaders.bandcamp.com, and keep an eye out for new material from us. Again, that's thebetterinvaders.bandcamp.com. Here's a track off of a record, Beyond the Veil, Beneath the Mask. Happy Memorial Day.